And welcome to tonight's meeting. And can I welcome Councillor Brendan McKeown to join us tonight. Is a cabinet member going to?
I'm here for the air conditioners.
Oh, I thought you were going to say you're only here for the beer.
No, he doesn't drink.
Oh, well, that's his hard cheese, isn't it? Yeah, right. Tonight's meeting probably won't be a very long one, but I'll to explain to you the external auditors are in fact late yet again, and I felt that rather than have a rather very long meeting where we're looking at the full accounts for the whole year, that if we at least dealt with Stephen's tonight, then it means that, you know, it won't be extra long when we have the next one. We'll talk about the next one a bit later. So if we just actually start the meeting and ask Jim, have any apologies, Jim?
Yes, Chairman. Apologies from Councillor Fordham, who is substituted tonight by Councillor McKeown, and also apologies from Councillor Nixon, who hasn't appointed a sub.
He hasn't?
James Nixon?
He's supposed to be here.
Oh, right, okay.
I spoke to him less than an hour.
Right,
he said he was on his way.
Maybe he's on his way then.
Here, I
should
probably kick him.
Well, I should think so too, because, you know, I have said before, could you please speak to your group and ask if you can get subs here?
No, he should be here.
Right. Be here. Unless there's a great big hold up that we know nothing about. You never know your luck, do you? Right then. So, we're going to start off with Stephen. I bet he's glad to know.
Thank you, Chair. I think both of them are me tonight, Chair.
It's your meeting tonight, isn't it, Stephen?
It is, unfortunately, yes.
Do you want us to introduce Brendan?
Yes, please, please.
Well, I'm Angela Loughran, and I'm Chair of this committee.
Yeah.
There you go.
Jim Dean from Democratic Services.
Peter Jones.
Roy James.
Stephen
Bradley, Chief Internal Auditor and Risk Manager.
Mike Dawson.
Brendan McKeown.
Right, so. Right then, is that you happy then, Brendan? Right, okay, right, let's fire ahead then. Stephen.
Okay, thank you, Chair. The first report on the agenda that I have is the Internal Audit Progress Report. So this is a summary of the work up to the end of January, and it's predominantly focusing on the work from October to January, following on from the previous progress report that we brought to committee. Really, the substance starts on page four of the agenda, going on to the table partway down, where I give a summary of the audits that we've done in the period. It is only two audits for Stafford at this time. It's just how the profiling has worked and how we've completed audits over the two councils. But over the page, onto page six, gives a bit more detail of that breakdown. And there's a table at the top of appendix one. Which sets out the number of audits in the plan against what we've completed to draft and what we have in progress. So it's in the year to date, it was 9 and 12 audits in progress, which is 91% of the audit plan. And that's really our benchmark for the end of the year. We try to achieve 90% of the audit plan at year end, so we are on target to do that.
No, carry on. I'll bring Roy in.
The table below that just gives you the assurances we've given cumulatively to the year, and then over the page onto appendix two gives you the two audit reports that were issued in the period. Pleasing to note that both of those were substantial assurance, so nothing that we have any major concerns on. Over the page on appendix three on page eight, we start to list the audits that we haven't reported on but are in progress, just to give members that information. And then finally, the appendix four is on page 10 of the agenda, is the follow-up that we completed in the period. Now, I have just noticed there's a word missing in the comments and key recommendations at the end. It should say the 2015 tree survey in there. But really this is slightly concerning that we still have some actions not progressed to enable us to give a revised assurance, and it still is a partial assurance. And partly that is the fact that we still have some trees outstanding for the 2015 survey. That is vastly reduced from what it was at the time of the audit, and I have had a further update, and it has reduced now down to about a dozen trees that we haven't progressed from that 2015 survey, albeit we have had another tree survey in recent months as well that's given a clearer picture. That's all I have on the report itself. I'm happy to take any questions from members on anything in there.
Right, thank you for that, Stephen. Members, any questions? Roy has his hand up. I'll come to you first.
Can we just approve the minutes for last meeting?
I forgot to do that, didn't I?
No. It's was an oversight, madam, yeah, and so clearly understood that.
You should have told me that.
I'm
going to hold
the right moment.
And how many of you are? How many have you even read them, may I ask?
I cannot possibly answer for my colleagues.
There's
a difference
between
study and read, Madam Chair.
Right. Okie dokie. So you're proposing?
Yeah, I propose that they're
seconding?
Correct, ma'am.
Right, piece of seconding. Right, okie dokie. Right. So is that all your hand is up for?
No, right. I go a bit further, unfortunately.
That's all right.
Right, 91%. Where are we now,
though? Page, please, can you tell us
January.
What we're... Roy, can you tell us what page you're on so that we're all in the same page?
Off the top of my head, I can't. Just looking down the list of those that were in progress, the majority of those have now either produced reports or are very close to producing reports. We are a little bit flexible with the 31st of March end date for the reports, but the bulk of the work will have been done on most of those now. So we will be still, I would suggest that those outstanding reports have been completed. There may be another one or two. I think we started another IT audit that wasn't on the list in that period. So yeah, we are on track to hit at least the 90% benchmark figure that we have and achieving above that.
So out of page 3 and 4, which are the ones that are causing you issues?
I think the ones that have probably been lagging a little bit are some of the Rems and Bens ones that have probably taken a little bit longer in terms of that. But that's partly because the team are still heavily involved in COVID grants and also now preparing for the rebate that's coming. So and the economic development team are also in that. The economic regeneration side are also involved in those COVID grants, have been quite busy. I think it's just a matter of timing for lots of things. The busy team was the thing we've had over the last couple of years. So I don't think there's anything in there that I would have any need to raise to members' attention that we've been deliberately delayed. I think it is just workload and other things. And that's really tally for the whole audit plan, really, yeah. Where we've hit problems, there's been justifiable reasons.
Right, okay. Michael, please.
Having mentioned the Revison benefits and the COVID grants, we've heard quite a lot of press comment about the depth of fraud that HMRC is investigating. Would any of that come across things that you will be looking at?
It partly has. We've been doing some work on the COVID grants throughout the year, partly using our contractors because some of my team actually supported the team in the early stages of the grants doing fraud verification work. So we will be given some assurances and we'll, as part of this year's assurance, look at those grants and what's been paid. We have had a few instances where things got referred to the agencies for potential fraud. And there was some police involvement looking at some others that were wider and more organised that have been involved. But I think from my knowledge of the areas, we haven't had too many that have been exposed to the fraud that some of the other areas have. So I think we've done quite well because the teams did as much verification as we could. Mm. Some of the early grants were paid just to people who we already knew to bank accounts we were all already aware of, so it was easier. I think it's where they've changed to some of the more discretionary ones where a little bit more of that has come in, albeit I am aware nationally that there were schools involving attempts to change bank accounts and get payments going to other bank accounts, so we have been alert to that as well. But there will be assurance of the annual report and the COVID grants from the work that we've done.
Do we have a number that we could put on our potential exposure?
I can't, unfortunately, give an answer on that. I'm not close enough to the whole piece of work to say that. I mean, the finance team and the guys in Ben's managing may be more aware of what is being looked at, but I think we prevented any more than potentially went through that we were questioning all about. But if you want, we can see if we can get an answer to that, Chair.
If that was possible, Chair, I think it would be very useful.
If you could then, Stephen, please. Right. Can I come to Brendan first, then I'll come to you, Mike, please. Brendan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to ask a couple of questions about Appendix 3, please.
Yeah.
Anybody who knows me knows that I'm obsessed with Section 106, monitoring and delivery. And I'm aware that there is a task and finish group with resources committee, I think.
If I may chat, as I understand it, two of the scrutiny committees have requested reviews. I think, was it the
economic
one and the resources one?
Yeah. I'm very much on the case of Section 106 because we all know there's 3 million sloshing around in the coffers. And I've been pressing very hard with the Section 106 officers to try and unlock that money by making it easier to apply for it. But we've only got 12 months left of this particular council, and I think it would be great if we could unlock that money as soon as possible so that all ward councillors, where there is money in that ward.
So, Brendan, what's your question?
Well, the question is, where are we at with Section 106?
Well,
these
are audits that are in progress at the moment.
Yes. But, I mean, when are we expecting to deliver on that then?
Well, the plans for most of the audit work would be to get things completed in the year. There may be reasons why some things are delayed. I do know there is a lot of work currently going on from offices as well, looking into Section 106 with the Section 151 officer, and looking at a lot of arrangements. So I think at the moment, as it stands, we're reassessing where we are in terms of the audit report from that. But I am feeding into some of the officer work that's going on as well. So looking at the processes, I can't give you a firm answer on what will be happening with that, and I think some of the questions are more relevant for operational purposes and outside of this committee, which is more about the controls of the process rather than what money is there and accessing it and whether we can look at opening that up. So.
If I could add to that, Stephen's just referred to an officer group has been set up to look at a number of audits on the Section 106 funds, and that is being led by the Section 151 officer. I had a conversation with Stephen when I knew the group was being set up, and there were some concerns over the timing of the audit that we got, because whilst it might have suited one of the teams involved, it was actually causing some challenges for finance. What we'd agreed we'd do was potentially defer the actual audit a little bit, but put some audit time into the task and finish group to make sure that we get the right processes in place. Because actually it's pointless us going in and auditing in a few months' time if we know the process hasn't been set up right in the first place. So we've shifted our emphasis to supporting officers to make sure that process is right. We will still do some audit work a little bit later on, but that's all likely to come after the report is due to go to the first of the task and finish groups, because I think that's going to be around July time.
June, I believe.
Well, I know as a group we're looking to finish the work by June in time for the first report to go into when the task and fringe group. So, and that's about mainly at the moment, making sure we can account for everything, that it's all where it should be, and that we've got then proper mechanisms in place to keep all of that running. So that's where we're focusing our efforts at the moment.
I'm a new boy and I'm not quite sure what my terms of reference are being here, but thank you.
That's all right, right. Okay, anything else you wanted to ask?
No, probably just the next item down there, economic development.
No, you're welcome to ask questions on this particular item on the agenda. Any questions you have, you're welcome to ask them.
Again, in terms of these big projects like Niesbrook, and the gateways in Israel, your role is to make sure that the procedures are in place to make it happen. So,
In terms of the audit work like that, the projects, what we tend to look at is the project management arrangements. Have they got the risk registers identified? Are they identifying the relevant actions, and does it seem to be broadly on track? So we don't necessarily look in detail at some of the other elements, because there are performance reports, progress reports that go to leadership team, go to cabinet and other things on these big projects. So we're looking at the governance arrangements, the frameworks and the operational things. So we can give you assurances that as far as we can tell, we've set the right processes up, we've set the right project groups up to deliver the project, what the performance monitoring and how they are doing against the plan will come to other mechanisms. So that's really trying to get the clarity of what we report on and what will come to other sources like cabinet reports and other things for the project.
Thank you.
Okay. You happy with that? Mm-hmm. Right. Anything else on that point, Matt, on the agenda? That's up as far as page 10, Brendan, if you've got anything.
Madam Chair, on tree management, it might be an obvious question. So we've had a survey done in 2015 about four felling of trees and things. I don't know what, it might have been a question for this committee. Are they in a dangerous position? Because there we are 7 years later and there's still trees that haven't been done.
It could be that all these ones that they haven't got to yet are still in a dangerous position.
Well, yeah, so
I don't think actually Stephen goes out and looks at all the trees. That's not quite what his audit is.
Yeah. If I may share, the information I can give from the knowledge of looking at these things, these are trees that were identified to be felled. So the normal reasons would be that they need major work, they're old, they're dying, so they could be presenting a hazard and could be dangerous. There was a very large number in the 2015 survey. We perhaps, and why we reported on it is, we perhaps didn't act as quickly as we could have done in addressing those things. And the fact that we are now in 2022 and we still have, I believe, the current date around about a dozen trees identified in 2015 still to work on. They have been reassessed since then, and we've done a whole new tranche. So, unfortunately, more trees will be back on the list and increase.
It's constant survey.
So it's about every 5 years they do a full survey and assess the condition of the trees. But I think for us, if we've identified something as you say, potentially dangerous, needs dismantling and felling rather than just some pruning and maintenance, we would have expected procedures to be in place to have that
done them first
before the position we're in. Yeah.
Do we still have a tree officer, Stephen?
There are a number of people involved in it. I think some of the work is contracted out, some is done by in-house tree teams, but it all sits within the street scene service now. Because at one point there was elements of it sitting in planning, and another element that was the operational side. But it is all now under one team. As I say, some's in-house, some we do outsource to some contractors as well to try and address it.
Right. You all right with that, Peter?
Yeah, no, it's fine. Yeah.
Mike, you had your hand up.
Thank you, Chair.
You want to come over to talk to us, or are you happy shouting from over there?
Thank you. First of all, it was raised about the grants, which
Rob Wolfe's team have been very busy on paying out these grants.
Done sterling work.
What I'd like to say is these grants were paid to businesses which are already on our books paying business rates. So the chances of fraud are very low. The complaints we get are from people who don't get a grant.
Yeah.
And we have reviewed some of those and made some discretionary grants. That's what was happening there. Regarding the revenues and benefits, the last cabinet meeting we had some write-offs. There was only one item in there which was due to a mistake of somebody in our department.
Yeah.
And I think I said at the time, the government does accept that you can make a number of mistakes, but it's provided it's less than 1%, I think 1% of your total money spent. The government doesn't completely reimburse you. Brendan's question about 106 money, it isn't really a question for this committee, as you said. There was an email not long ago explaining a new procedure, which I thought
there
was
coming forward. That came out from...
For the lower value cases, which the councillors can...
Yeah, it was an easy to follow thing, but I think, you know, that there's more in-depth investigation required.
There are a number of cases of 106 money which are in the bank. And what we try to do is to group them together to do the big schemes if we can. But if there's one specifically for an area, then if it's below 50,000, I think, then the councillors can stop that moving. And the other thing that was mentioned was Meesbrook. Meesbrook is a huge project, and I was at a board meeting today about that. There's lots and lots of work going on behind the scenes, lots of preparatory work to do with transport issues, rail issues, water issues, all manner of things, none of which can really come out into the public domain just yet. From an audit point of view, as was said, what you have to do from an audit point of view is make sure you are doing what you say you're going to do. So once the process is set up, that's what you check.
Thank you for that. I think sometimes councillors feel that they could perhaps be better informed because they're not always aware of what's going on behind the scenes.
Aye.
And we don't expect things to come out into the open, but I think what Brendan's actually saying is sometimes councillors could do with a bit more briefing, even in confidence, so that we are not wondering what the hell's going on. Now, that's been going on for ages, and we don't know if it's still going on, and that I think
that's true. I think that it is difficult because there's landowners involved.
Oh, there's sensitivities, we know that.
There's landowners involved, which is difficult.
Yeah.
But it's all got to be married in with the local plan. You know, if Meesbrook's in, then the local plan will say this. If Meesbrook's out, then the local plan will say something totally different.
Yeah.
So these things, I think we've been promised a local plan review June, July.
Okay, Mike, thanks for that. Thank you very much. Roy, we're still on page.
Oh, Chairman, I beg your pardon.
Yeah.
Trees. After your last meeting, I was very concerned to hear what I heard, that the trees from 2015 had not been attended to. So I made some inquiries of the officers involved, and I was told that they were on with it. But I would be very, very concerned if a tree identified in 2015 as being required
I think that would have been dealt with. But I think, you know, we still don't know, Stephen, whether what was discovered in 2015 has been totally dealt with. I would imagine also that any really dangerous trees were dealt with immediately.
Exactly.
That's the whole point,
yes.
Yeah. Okay then. Right, Roy.
I was just going to say that the committee note this progress report, Madam Chairman.
Excuse me, I'm allowed to ask questions as well, you know.
Ah, sorry.
Especially if no one has raised the issues I have maybe identified. The question I was going to say to you, Stephen, looking back at page 6, it would appear that there are two audits at this time which haven't even been looked at. So at the end of January there were still two, because I'm never very good at maths, but whenever I do the additions there, it seems that there are two that aren't even started yet, because there are 9 that are completed to draft, there are 12 in progress, but your plan for this year, which ends next month, there are two that haven't even been started. So are those two, have they been started since the end of January, or are they going to be carried over to 22-23, or are they just going to get lost?
If I may, Chair, it would be very rare for anything to be totally lost. There are occasions where we do purposefully not decide to continue with an audit. I know that the figures also are slightly, they're not straightforward, because we have an audit plan that says we're going to do X number of audits, and within the audits that we complete, a few of those have been audits that were in the previous year's plan that have been completed this year, and there may be some from this year that do hang over and go into next year. So there isn't always a straightforward correlation between the figures. I can say that there was a couple of areas that we have already identified that were in the current year's plan that are not really going to be reported on. The biggest area that we had wanted to look at was the financial, the new finance system that was being
Yeah, that did.
We have deliberately decided not to do that because of numerous factors. One, there's been some delays in the full rollout and implementing procedures for that for that area, and also the finance team have been quite under under a lot of pressure at the moment, and as you've said at the start of this meeting, we haven't yet got a point where the accounts for the last financial year that should have been signed off at a delayed date of September still aren't in a position to be brought to this committee today. So the finance team have been working under various pressures. But I think as well, I will touch on it in the next report, some of the reasons why we decided not to carry that one over. But we are looking to work with the team to get the procedures in place and make sure the procedures are there. Much as we've said with the Section 106, actually, we're going to use our resources in a more proactive way rather than coming in after the event. So, in answer to your question, there isn't a straightforward answer to say there's two audits not been started because of the way the numbers all work. But it's about trying to say that we are delivering the number of audits that we aim to each year and getting assurance to you.
Yeah, but as I say, there were two that we aimed to, and we don't even know what they are. And as I say, I just wanted to know where you sweeten them under the carpet.
in terms of the annual report that we will bring, we are open in there about anything that was in the plan that is not going to be done and not going to be carried forward. So the report that comes to the committee next, which I say unfortunately is a few months away, that report comes to the committee in June. That will set out anything where we have decided not to carry it forward from the plan. And give members assurance for the whole year.
Right, good. Thanks for that, Stephen. Roy, you had your hand up.
I just wondered whether the missing two were in fact the ones on page 7.
No, well, it won't be, because Stephen said that one of them was in actual fact a new finance system. And they were completed to the 1st of October 2021.
The two that were referred to on page 10 were the two that have been completed in full during the period. So the two that aren't accounted for in there are the ones that haven't been started after the 1st of January. So when Stephen explained, when you get the next report, you'll get the full for the whole year, and we'll account for everything we've done in the year, anything we've had in the and anything that we've crashed on this year that we've handed over from last year. So you'll get the full picture in the last report.
Okay then. Right. So we're all happy about that then. We've had the trees explained to us. So we are being asked then, committee members, if you will note this report. Are we happy to do that? Right, okay. Right, thank you. Right, moving on then, it's you again that's dealing with item 3B for us, please, Stephen.
Okay, thank you, Chair. This item is now, rather than looking back, looking forward to the new financial year that will start on the 1st of April, and it's getting, we require members to approve the internal audit plan for the year. So I'll briefly go through the proposals that we're putting forward, and then at the end, Chair, we'll ask you to hopefully approve the plan that we've put forward.
Right.
Really just to draw some members' attention to a few key details in the report. So page 12 of your agenda is really where I would want to start in terms of the detail. And that's that the first thing that we do is to look at the resources available to the team to actually carry out the work and to give us an idea of how much work we can do. For the new year, the 2022-23 year, we come at a figure of 594 days of audits, and that's broken down in more detail at Appendix 1 that sets out our starting point, things that we discount, other work that we do, and then it sets out the internal audit plan days in there as well. But I'm not proposing to go through that in detail. Paragraphs 5354 also covers the structure of the team and where we're perhaps resourcing some of that from. And one of the key points is we have an apprentice in the team who's coming to the end of that apprenticeship, so we are hoping that in the new financial year they will be significantly more productive than they have been because they will have completed their training. On page 12 still, at 5.5, there's a mention of the work that was agreed last year for the section to support Canex, leisure contractor, with some internal audit work for 40 days. With things that have happened throughout the year, we never really delivered those days in the current year, so the proposal at the moment is to carry those forward and do that work in the year. What we have said is that if that is planned to be continued as a long-term arrangement to bring some income into the team, that we will come back and seek members' approval more formally for that as an ongoing arrangement, and we will be looking to formalise that more. In terms of what Stafford from the council gets out of that, we are proposing to use the income that we will get for the 40 days to invest in the team and to procure some software, some audit management software, which will hopefully improve the efficiency and our ability as a team. So there will be benefits across the two for a slight reduction in days for the services across the two councils. As I say, moving down to page 13, really looking at how we've actually identified the work that we're doing, and that starts at 5.9. We have reviewed the audit universe, but we've only done a light touch review. So the audit universe is where we would normally list all of the areas that we've identified potentially to audit. Again, as we're still in quite an unusual set of circumstances, we have decided to not really look at that in a lot of detail, but focus our resources on three key elements of work, and that is the strategic risk areas and big risk areas for the council, the major projects that we have got on board. As we've mentioned earlier, we've got things like these groups, those big projects that are being undertaken for the Future High Streets Fund, the garden settlement and that type of thing, and also focus on the key systems for the council just to make sure that they are still robust with the changes in working environment and the situation that we've had. So the plan that follows at Appendix 2 is really focusing on those areas. We do split it down into a shared service element that covers both councils, Canex, Chase and Stafford Borough, and the areas that are focused on Stafford. And then finally there is an IT audit plan in there that we have separated out. It's not for any other reason other than we use technical external contractors to do the work that we don't have the skills in-house to do, so it's always been just traditionally shown as a separate list to account for those days. As mentioned previously at 5.11, there are two areas that we have specifically excluded from the internal audit plan, but we are not ignoring those areas because they are quite high risk areas. But we feel it's better to use our time more proactively upfront with consultancy work, supporting the development and supporting what is happening, and keeping a watching brief. The first one of those is the finance system and the e-payment system, which, as mentioned, has been delayed slightly, and we haven't got the procedures in place. So we are going to work proactively with finance to make sure we set up everything as operationally as we can, and as robustly as we can. The second one are the proposals for the shared service arrangements between the two councils and potentially progressing shared services. Now, obviously, there's reports going through Cabinet and Council at the moment. Until we know what those say, we're not quite sure what direction this will take. So we haven't been able to plan any internal audit work. But our proposal is to monitor what is happening, and where we feel relevant, we will dip in and do audit work. Again, as we mentioned, for big projects, we'll be focusing on the arrangements for managing those projects and giving members assurance that those have been set up as robustly as possible.
Chairman, can I just my ignorance? These dates, when you say you were going to look at it 2021, 2022, at some point somebody decides how long it's going to take to do. Have some of your estimates been a bit optimistic, so now you're falling behind?
In terms of the finance system, it's not about our resources as a team, it's been more about the resources in the finance team and the impact of the delayed external audits, and also as I say, just their ability to actually service the audits and actually get the new finance system in at a place that they are happy with to really launch its full functionality to the department.
I mean, we'd like these things done quickly, and they're going to take as long as they're going to take.
As I say, unfortunately, with some of those things, they are, and we can't really see any definitive timescales for both of those things to say it will be in, it will be sorted, and we can review it and give you assurance on it's operational.
Yeah, I just wonder about you being put in a position where you put a date on it that's not really going to be too. And then it makes us look bad.
I think ideally, where we were when we did the plan last year, even coming out of COVID, we were optimistic that the finance system would come in. I think we weren't expecting probably the longer lockdowns and other things that are delaying it, and 2 years delayed external audits, obviously the retirement of the Section 151 officer and other people acting on
life getting
worse. So unfortunately lots and lots of things have all fallen against the finance team really, and we didn't feel it's relevant for us to be going in and asking questions when we know up front that what we're going to be recommending at the end is what they already know, and that's not a good use of our time, and it's not a good use of their resources as well.
Thank you. Thank you, Jim.
Shall we let Stephen finish and then I'll come to you, James? Is that all right?
Yeah. If I may, Chair, I think that was all I was going to really dwell on. I wasn't going to go through the detailed list of Appendix 2 and Appendix 3 to present to the committee, but I'm happy to take any questions on any of those elements that are in there, or any elements that members are thinking, well, why aren't we looking at something, or is there anything out there of concern to members, either its inclusion or its omission?
Right, thanks, Steve. Thanks for that. Right, James.
In a similar vein to what you were discussing with Peter, I gather Peter Kendrick is moving on from his position within the IT department. Is that going to cause issues, do you think, with the IT?
It shouldn't cause any major issues in terms of the team, the views that we have. As this committee is aware, we do sometimes have some delays with the IT audits and getting them through and getting progress in the reports. The head of technology leaving shouldn't create any major issues because the rest of the team are still there. So a lot of the work we do is day to day with other members of the team. It just does get signed off by the head of technology. So he's agreed the IT audit plan. He has flagged up that he has some concerns about resources in the IT section, but that isn't unusual for many heads of service. That we're not the most popular at times when we say we want to go in and look at it. Quite often one of the first things thrown back at us is the resources within the team, it's a bad time and those things. So we've already said that we will try and work with them as soon as possible. Some of the areas we would like to try and get done as soon as possible to use the head of technology's current knowledge of it, but a lot of the team who will are below him, even if he leaves and isn't replaced from somebody within the team quickly, there is still a lot of knowledge in that team, and we will be able to get the information we want, because particularly the IT audit plan, we are focusing on the big risk areas. So it's things like making sure our network's secure, making sure we've got resilience, and also making sure we can support the move to more flexible working, perhaps having some staff working at home rather than everybody in the office, which is the reality we've seen for the last 2 years. So we've already put a lot of that in place, but it's making sure that where we do start getting more people back into the office, it can be more seamless, that transition from home working, office working. Even things like supporting meetings and having that ability to perhaps do hybrid meetings if that's what members want, or for people like the external auditor to present more hybridly if they are, if it improves efficiency. Obviously, we need to make sure it's all there. But to answer the question, I don't think the head of technology leaving will throw the whole plan out.
And then if I may have another question, if that's all right. You mentioned you had an apprentice in your team, and you said they're due for completion. Will they be taken on permanently upon completion of their qualification?
They are in a substantive post anyway. We took them on. It's almost the other way around, but they aren't retained if they fail the exam within a reasonable time and resit. But they are in a substantive post. Our aim with them would be to consolidate their knowledge, give them a lot more practical experience, because with the best will in the world, the poor apprentice started a month before we went into lockdown in 2020, so he spent most of his time with us in a non-normal working environment, so he hasn't quite got some of the practical experience that he should have had within the 2 months. So we want to consolidate that, and then there is a higher level apprenticeship that he can do to get him a full professional membership, and that's where we would like to see him to develop into, and then potentially we can start training up again. As we said to members before in this committee, it's quite difficult recruiting into the more senior positions at the moment, and it's getting worse. Talking to colleagues across the West Midlands and wider, everybody's struggling to recruit, so that training internally is our best route. So yeah, we wouldn't want to lose the time and effort we put into training somebody when we can keep them, and that's our plan.
By the same token, Stephen, hopefully there's going to be an obligation on his part to stay with us for a fixed period of time. You know, if there's all these difficulties, we don't want him skinning off somewhere else once we've done all the training.
No, not right.
Yeah. Yeah, as I say, Chair, we're hopeful he will stay for a period of time to consolidate that learning. It's in the lap of the gods.
Yeah.
Almost what they choose to do and what opportunities come up. But I think within the local area, I think more people are looking at training up than advertising those higher jobs at the moment.
Yeah. Anything else, then?
No, thank you.
Right, Roy.
I'm just going to go to the one above 5.3. So we're carrying this vacancy, which is being covered by the external contractor. Are you saying we can't recruit at the moment? It's difficult to recruit. Can we get another apprenticeship?
To answer the simple question, it is difficult to recruit, and that's why we are using the contractors. We've got a good relationship with the organisation that we're currently using. They've been doing audits with us competitively through procurement routes for a number of years now. But we've got a relationship where they work well with the team, with our working practices. The intention ultimately would be for our current apprentice to perhaps trade up and get qualified and move into that more senior position that we're covering with the contractors, that will then reduce the need to buy that in, with the exception of the technical IT audit work. And probably at that point, we would then look to take another more junior apprentice on and start the process again. We need to get into better succession planning. Some of our existing team members are not too close, but will be in it within an age of within the next sort of 5 years or plus, looking to be retiring and moving on. So we do have to try and get that train going now. In an ideal world, we probably would let the one apprentice move up and take another apprentice on at the bottom, but with such a small team, we can't resource training of two apprentices because of the impact it has on the rest of the team to give them the knowledge.
Training takes time.
It does, unfortunately. So our long-term plan is to do that. Short-term plan is to consolidate the person we've got, move up into that position, and reduce the longer-term need.
Chair, if I can just add to it, though, there are benefits in having a contractor working with us as well, because it gives us some flexibility and balance between our own staff and, as I say, having that guaranteed level of work available to us, so that, you know, if we were to have one of our team members absent, you know, at least for the contractor, they have an expectation to deliver their day. So whilst it's not what we probably choose to do in an ideal world, it isn't all bad. Benefits, and we get to see the way they do things as well.
So if I may, Chair, the way we give the work to the contractors, it's a piece of work rather than so many days. So we give them, we agree a fee for a piece of work. We give them so many pieces of work a year. And
so if they take longer or less?
If they take less or more, it's theirs, and they have to resource those. They have to find people in their team to deliver it. Albeit we do have a caveat that we do vet the CVs of anybody who's going to be doing our work before they start doing it. So we've almost got a bigger pool of staff to deliver that one person's work than if we had a person in place.
I suppose also it's easier if you're not all working from home. You know, I think, you know, on both the part of the apprentice and on your own part, you know, if you're working in the office, it can sometimes be a bit easier for you. Right, you're happy with that, Roy? Anything else you wanted to ask?
I've marked them all. That's I have a question mark on 5.11, but it's been answered.
Mike,
thank you, Chairman. Yeah, just a few points. On the vacancy, this will be a mechanical appointment, and other than the fact that there's nobody sitting on the shelf waiting for a job, you've got full authority to recruit if you want to. I'm pleased you raised the point about the finance thing. You can't audit something that's not in place. But it was racking my brains this afternoon. I've got to speak to Emma Fuller about something. Mm-hmm. And it's to do with the finance and why it isn't in place.
Yeah.
Because I'm particularly worried that we haven't got a system set up for direct debits for the brown bin, which has caused a lot of problems. So I wanted to speak to Emma about that. In respect of Peter Kendrick, I don't know how much is generally known, but Peter is due to retire, but he's just reducing his hours for several months, so it'll be a while before he goes.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got somebody that he thinks would be appropriate to replace him, whether that person will or not.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody that he's bringing on.
Yeah. But there is some succession plan in place. Anyone else, Mike, have you anything?
No.
Brendan, did you want to ask anything?
No.
I think some of the points I have raised are the increase. Interesting there about, you know, it was agreed that the arrangement for the auditing for IHL, I'm assuming that was an agreement internal. It wasn't. It was officers who took that decision to continue.
Chair, yes, it was, but as Stephen explained, in reality, all we've done is roll forward the days that we didn't deliver, and we did come and explain to the committee last year that we've committed to doing these 40 days as a one-off, so we've not been able to deliver them, largely because of issues with IHL, not ourselves.
Yes.
So we've rolled that forward because we've got that commitment to do it. but if there is any request from IHL to continue further from that, we will come and discuss with this committee and CanEx committee to see whether you're happy for us to do that. As I say, 40 days, it has a minimal impact on both councils' plans, you know, in terms of 80 days for each one, and we will we will account for any income we get. It will either come back as a saving back to the council, or on this account, what we're saying is we'd like to use that money to invest in the service. Stephen has been long after an IT system to support the work of the team. We've never had anyone to be able to do that, so that just presents us with this one unique opportunity to do that. We will come back and discuss it with the committee if it becomes an issue. We may well not, IHL may choose to make their own arrangements.
And that will be 22-23. So, no other questions on item 3B. Right, if members are happy, then can we, in fact, you're actually going to approve what Stephen has brought to you tonight?
Approved.
And right, we all agreed that we approved the audit plan for, right? That's fine, thank you very much. So, that more or less is the main business for the evening. But Jim is going to mention about our next audit and accounts meeting. And you might feel you want to come to that as well.
Absolutely.
Brendan. Right then, Jim.
Thank you, Chairman. Yeah, it's been necessary to convene an extra meeting of the committee. So a date for your diaries, please, members. So that'll be 6:30 p.m. on Thursday, the 21st of April. The agenda will come out in due course.
So can you all take a note of that, the 21st? And that should be our external auditors who should be here. And presumably we'll have a meeting with the external auditor before the meeting.
They've not confirmed yet, but that's the assumption, yeah.
I would assume that members want that. We usually do have a meeting with the external auditors before the meeting. And that was 6 o'clock.
Yeah.
I mean, we can't take everything that these two
said. I will need to talk to Emma as well about the next meeting, because traditionally when you have the final account, she would try and do some training with you before it. I don't know whether she's going to be in a position to be able to do much on that this year, but I will have that conversation. We'll make sure you get a full set of arrangements, whether it's a pre-meeting with the external auditors in lieu of some training, or whether you're going to be offered training. That
we'll sort out one way or another, you'll have something that will allow you to make some sort of assessment on the final accounts
reports that you're going to receive. Yeah, but presumably that will not be the same night as this, the training. It has traditionally been just before your meeting to make it kind of relevant, because you'll need the papers to be able to understand how you're being directed. But as I say, Emma may not be in a position to do that, I don't know. In which case, if you don't get that, by all means, have your pre-meeting with the external auditor. You might need to allow a little bit more time, given the length of the agenda that you'll have. So, as I say, I'll talk to Emma and I'll liaise with Jim to self-check.
Because that would be a really long meeting if we had training.
It won't be any lengthy training, but you might just need something to give you a bit of an explanation outside of the formal meeting as to kind of what you've been asked to consider. Yeah, because it's quite a technical one. It's hugely technical. I wouldn't begin to profess to be able to explain and guide you on that one. But between Emma and the external auditors, one or other will do something to give you an opportunity to prepare yourselves for the formal public part of the meeting on that.
Roy?
I was just going to suggest, therefore, should we move the meeting to 17:30 for the pre-meeting and the 18:30 for the real one? That gives us an hour to either A, do the training, or B, talk to the external auditors.
We would need to go by your suggestion.
Yeah. Going to be enough time.
Chair, that probably would be about that, but let me check with Emma first and the external auditors, is their availability to get here and everything else. But no, that would probably what I would advise.
So you would check then for us to make sure that we'll go by what Emma says, you know, the time that they. Right, what she thinks we would not several hours training, I hope.
No, definitely don't do that.
Well, not that bad, surely.
No. But I say from memory and experience of doing that previously, we've normally contained it within an hour slot to be able to do that. Yeah, you definitely won't want more than an hour.
So if we all sit quietly and concentrate.
I seem to ask that I'm invited to the training.
Oh yes.
I'd rather that you have your private meeting than the training than the meeting.
Yeah. Shall we actually say yes as long as you provide sandwiches for us?
Well, we
won't ask for a knife and fork tea, but I think we'll ask for some sandwiches. So we'll wait then to hear from you, Judith, about the start time. But you all now know, you know, a fairly lengthy session on the 21st of April. Okay, can I therefore thank Jim for tonight and Judith and Stephen. And can I thank the Cabinet Member for coming along. And can I also thank you members for your preparation and for coming along.
Thank you.
Have a safe journey home.
Thank you, Jim.
Right, you're welcome. You, and I shall see you all on the 21st of April. If not before it.